Whenever news breaks, you'll get it here first. The Andrew Carter Morning Show, CJAD 800.
All right, it's 7:39. Tom Mulcair is brought to you by Guaranteed Industries. With the warm weather approaching, Guaranteed Industries and Lennox would like to remind you to book your spring air conditioning maintenance tune-up now. Call 514-342-3400 or GuaranteedIndustries.com. Morning, Tom.
Morning, Andrew.
You know what small businesses need in Quebec? More red tape. That's what they need. And starting Thursday, small Quebec companies, this is with employees between 5 and 49 employees, must tell the government what proportion of their employees are not capable of communicating in French. So it's a it's a little census of French proficiency. First of all, how do you measure that? And second of all, what the hey? Like, seriously?
Yeah. And when you know that it's exactly that size business that creates most of the jobs in the province, it's almost as if they're doing it on purpose to make their lives miserable. This is all stuff that's been programmed in, of course, to Bill 96. The June 1st cutoff date was known. We knew this stuff was coming down the pipe, but nobody figured that they'd actually go through with it. Look, back in the day, we're talking about zealots. You know, this is 1977. This is sort of, we're going to get our hands on this thing. We're going to impose the Charter of the French Language, Bill 101, and we're going to be reasonable. We're still going to use our heads because it was two different categories, you know, businesses with 50 to 99 employees and then 100 and over. And that was a way of saying, look, we're not going to bother small businesses. But Francois Legault has another vision. You know, he and Pierre Fitzgibbon and this great economic team that they're supposed to have. Saying, no, this is what we want to do with taxpayers' money. We want to have more language inspectors, more language police, and more forms to fill it, as you correctly say, Andrew. So it's a mess, but it's the type of stuff we love imposing on ourselves here in Quebec.
Okay, so what's the goal here? So say I have a small man, I've got 12 employees and I have a little place in the Côte de Liesse Industrial Park there. And six of them are Anglos who have West Island French and the others are Francos. Yep. So what's the goal here by me declaring
exactly
that?
I mean, they're trying, the ultimate goal is to make sure that the people who have French as their only language are going to be able to get documents from the employer in French. That's only fair. Everybody will agree with that. But then beyond that, I think that it's your first question that's the most important. How is that small business owner actually supposed to evaluate these things? And is it self-declared? Do they just go around? And how does it make people feel? If somebody's going around doing a head count of who has what level of French language proficiency and they're not on the right side of that ledger, do they fear for their job? And this is the type of society that you create when you allow these things to go on unchecked. And this is where we are in Quebec right now, tragically. And by the way, worth recalling that Bill C-13, Mr. Trudeau's reform of the Official Languages Act, now incorporates Bill 96 by reference into the federal legislation. So good luck trying to plead that this stuff goes against the charter, for example, because, of course, even though they're using the notwithstanding clause preemptively with 96, well, Trudeau seems to agree with that despite his brave words to the contrary.
It just seems very invasive. I mean, whose business
it's
is it?
It's totally invasive.
Whose business is it if my small company has...
It's your small business. It's your small business. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And by the way, since you're in business, you're going to want to make sure that you can hire people. And that means that the vast majority of the people you're hiring are French. And you've got to be a good employer to them and give them their documents in French and their orders and so forth. But beyond that, this is Quebec. And we've had this stuff going on, as I mentioned, for 45 years. And it's not going to stop.
Okay. Albertans go to the polls today. And you said there was
a
heavy turnout in advanced polling. So that, what is that normally?
Yeah, they had, well, in my experience, that's usually a harbinger of a desire for change. And it's one of the most, you know, those of us who live and analyze and comment on politics all day long, this is one of the more fascinating elections I've seen in decades here in Canada. Two women have had a very strong campaign. Danielle Smith, who's now the head of what they call the United Conservative Party. Rachel Notley, who 8 years ago was elected with a strong majority for the NDP, did a very good job. But then when Jason Kenney was able to unite the right. So Notley won 8 years ago because the right-wing parties were split. There was Danielle Smith's Wild Rose Party, and there was the Conservative Party. Jason Kenney brought those two together, and for his efforts, they fired him. And they put back Danielle Smith. Now, Smith throughout this campaign, they've come up with these wild things she said. They were just able to dig up all kinds of amazingly weird things that she said. So Smith and the Conservatives wanted to make the election about the economy. Okay, you can't trust the NDP, you know, that sort of old discourse. But at the same time, what's happened is, very subtly, Rachel Notley has managed to make Albertans think about leadership. Danielle Smith could say or do almost anything and probably embarrass the province of Alberta. So, like a lot of Canadians, the NDP in Alberta is socially left of center, economically center right. You know, they've got their heads on their shoulders, they know how to count, and they did a good job managing last time. This, Andrew, is going to be a case that comes down to who's got the boots on the ground. Who's got the cowboy boots on the ground? Who can get the vote out? And speaking of cowboy boots, Edmonton, solidly NDP. That's the province's capital. The country, you know, the countryside, solidly conservative. Calgary is going to decide this thing. The NDP needs to pick up 12 seats or so in Calgary. And if they pull that off, they've got the government again. So it's really going to be fun to watch this one.
24 Sussex has been mothballed, the official residence of the Prime Minister since 2015. There's a report out this morning that feds warned about risks of delaying this decision about 24 Sussex almost a year before it closed. So this place is, I mean, you got to do something, Tom.
Yes. You go to Hewitt and you get the biggest darn bulldozer they've got and you just push the thing down. It's finished. I don't think that there's any way to get this thing back without spending so much money that the average Canadian taxpayer would just, you know, light their hair on fire. So I think that what people are trying to do at the National Capital Commission is to say, like, don't look at us. We told them that this was going to happen, and they've just let it slide. Trudeau's got a very determined character. He's got an idea in his head. It's very hard to disabuse him of the notion. He simply decided that it was too politically costly for him to do the rentals at 24 Sussex. He moved into what they call Rideau Cottage on the grounds of the Governor General's residence, Rideau Hall. Okay, now this thing has fallen apart. Trudeau's in his eighth year. This thing is falling apart. It's full of rodents. It's dangerous. It's got asbestos. It has to be taken down. But Trudeau is going to wear that now because he thought he was just going to avoid the problem of the $150 million tab to have the thing renoed. But it's not going to even be that. So Trudeau's not going to be off the hook. He's going to pay the full political price anyway. And you and I are going to be stuck paying for this thing no matter what.
You have a good day, Tom. Thank you.
Take good care, Andrew.